Hello, thank you all so much for giving me the time to speak to you today. All right. I'm going to speak to you a little bit today about our healthcare system, what's broken about it, and what we can do about it. So, this is what our current system looks like. It is private and for profit, often tied to your job, has been reformed incrementally over the years. It is fragmented and extremely complicated. So you might get part of your healthcare from your job, you might get part of it from some kind of public program, you might get part of it from Obamacare, right? There's just all these different pieces that fit together really complexly. It is often extremely wasteful. It's not universal, so that means it doesn't cover everybody. Lots of folks still, even today, don't have health insurance. And it's been in continual crisis for going on a century now, where we just constantly are having problems with our healthcare system. We've tried to reform it, and that has had mixed success. So that's, like I said, I mean, this goes back all the way to, say, 1943. When a single payer program was proposed but shot down, in particular by sort of large actors like the American Medical Association and folks who had a lot of interest in not seeing some kind of a single payer program pushed through. In the 60s, we did at least get things like Medicare and Medicaid. So we got, health care for the retired, for the young, the sick, the disabled, things like that. This was a great, step forward, but it still left lots of folks uncovered. Kind of fast forward closer to today, and we, have gotten the Affordable Care Act, often called Obamacare, which has certainly helped things. It, made it so that you can no longer be denied for pre-existing conditions, which of course has been extremely important, particularly for, chronically ill and disabled folks. But it also still had some weaknesses. So, for example, it was initially going to have a public option, and that got taken out. And folks who are having to buy, directly off of the affordable care markets, often face really high prices that they struggle to afford. So, one thing I think that's useful for framing this conversation is to keep in mind that we are the only industrialized nation, developed nation on the face of the planet that doesn't have some kind of single payer or some kind of universal healthcare program, right? Whether that's a program like in the United Kingdom, where the government actually owns the hospitals, or something like a government-run insurance system, which is where, hospitals remain privately owned, but your insurance is covered by the state rather than private insurers. So we are the only country on the face of the planet that, or only developed country on the face of the planet that does not have some kind of healthcare guarantee for all of its citizens. So I'm going to try and make this at least a little bit interactive today. And one of the things that I always like to ask crowds, and if maybe just raise your hand, is sort of what would you want to see in an improved, a better healthcare system? See a hand in the back there. Yeah, so I hear everyone gets covered and there's no profit motive. Okay, yeah. So capping those costs so they're not constantly exploding. Yes, no trans exclusions. Yeah, I think we can maybe add just non-discriminatory in general, right? Healthcare that's genuinely for everyone, for sure.
Lower the cost
Yes, yeah, that's a big one. Prescription drugs in particular, we pay, we're going to get into that here in a second, but we pay more in this country for our prescriptions than, again, pretty much anywhere else in the developed world.
Yeah,
absolutely. So we're not saddling doctors, for example, with hundreds of thousands of dollars in student debt, for sure. So can you say that again? Okay, yeah. So what I'm hearing is we have a very reactive system where people show up sick, but they're not. They show up when they're already in crisis, but they're not getting that just everyday wellness care that might prevent those more significant health crises from happening in the first place. Yeah, for sure. Yep. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, those deductibles and co-pays make things inaccessible, and also some plans just don't cover things like mental health care. One more. Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, right now, I think we can probably all have experiences of how complicated and bureaucratic and just sort of tangled kind of web of, again, all these different things from your private insurance to public programs and all of these that get kind of worked together into this very complicated, difficult to understand system. Yeah, absolutely. So what your doctor thinks you need is what you need, not what some insurance person wants to pay for. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. 100%. Yeah. Okay, so these are some great ideas. We'll get to kind of what of these are and are not covered in our current sort of plans for Medicare for All here in a second. But first, like, why now? Why fight for this now? Like I said, this is a system that's been struggling for a long time. One of them is just that healthcare costs remain one of voters' top concerns, right? And it's something that affects all of our lives. It causes a huge financial burden for a lot of folks, and it continues to be one of people's, you know, most pressing concerns when they're asked in polls. Also, it's gotten a lot more popular, I would say, since like 2016 in the Bernie Sanders campaign. So in recent data, about 2/3 of Americans believe that the government is responsible for ensuring that all Americans have some kind of health care, right? And Gallup polls show there's a preference for government-run, or that preference for government-run health care systems is getting higher and higher. So on the sort of blue side of the aisle, you know, Democrat voters tend to already be pretty in favor of this. But it's also getting more popular among Republican voters and more conservative voters as well, just as the crisis of the system gets worse and worse. So what is Medicare for All, or as we like to call it, improved Medicare for All, because Medicare itself has some issues that need to be worked out. So it's single payer. It's a government program that's financed by our tax dollars. It is universal coverage that would be for every single resident of the United States of America. It's comprehensive. So as we were talking about, it would cover, we like to talk about, you know, sort of head to toe, right? So not just the things that are typically covered by insurance, but also mental health care, which isn't covered by a lot of insurance, dental, eye care, things like that that often aren't covered by our insurance today, despite how much we're paying. Something that's important that I think is often a concern for a lot of folks is that your care remains privately delivered, right? So there are some countries, like I said, the UK in particular, where universal healthcare was achieved by having the government simply take over hospitals, clinics, just the entire healthcare system, right? People have to worry about that because, you know, they like their doctor. Their problem is generally with the insurer, not with the doctor, right? And they want to be able to stick with their doctor, and they don't particularly want the government kind of getting between them and their doctor. And what Medicare for All does is it does not take over the healthcare system like that. Instead, it replaces the private insurance system. So the government becomes the one insurer for everybody, but you still get to choose, you know, what doctors you want to go to, and that still remains private. So yeah, again, why do we say improved? We want to expand coverage for, you know, things like vision, dental, mental health care. We would love to, you know, we were talking about, I heard a couple of times, you know, issues with copays, premiums, deductibles. We would love to get rid of those entirely. There's some difference actually right now in the two different Medicare for All bills in Congress. And that's something we'll get into. But I think one of the things we'd really love to see is just no more deductibles, no more copays, premiums, things like that. And three, something I think is really important because this is a problem with Medicare right now, is we don't want private supplemental insurance, right? So what this does, and you can do this right now with Medicare, where you have these private companies. I'm sure any of you who've had Medicare are aware of this, you know, private companies selling these, I believe it's Part B plans that are kind of add-ons to your Medicare. The problem with this, I mean, one, we want to fight for a program that already covers everything you would need to cover. So we don't want to be in a situation where anybody needs to buy extra coverage to get basic things met. And two, we don't want private companies duplicating coverage, because part of what makes a single payer universal system work is that we're all in the same boat together, right? So when you have private insurers offering kind of duplicate coverage on top of a single payer system, you get this situation where the wealthy can kind of, they can go buy their own insurance, and they're no longer then invested in making sure that the public system is working well, right? Because they have their own private system, so it doesn't matter to them if the public system falls apart. So we want to make sure that we're all in the same boat together, so that we all have the same incentive to make sure that that system is working properly. So this is, like I said, kind of get into, you know, what are the plans right now at the federal level, sort of what are the bills being proposed? And they are slightly different. So we have a House and a Senate bill that are being proposed right now. Both would cover anybody who's a resident of the United States. The House bill would cover all medically necessary services, including things like long-term care, which is really important for, again, folks with chronic disabilities or chronic illness or disabilities, things like that. And the Senate bill does not actually cover that long-term care right now. That's something to be aware of. Some difference also with out-of-pocket spending. So the House bill just does away with premiums, deductibles, copays, all that stuff altogether. Just gets rid of it all. Whereas the Senate bill would still have some copays for some medications and things like that, although it would have a $200 a year maximum. So, you know, better than what we have now, but still we could fight for just no copays at all. Both of them take profit motive out of our healthcare entirely. Both, you know, again, bar private companies from kind of selling these private programs that would double up on what you're already getting through Medicare for All. And there will be slight implementation differences. So the House bill would be implemented over 2 years, whereas the Senate bill would be implemented over 4 years. And kind of the idea would be, you know, year one, you would, you know, folks over 65 are already on Medicare, right? So in year one, you would make that everybody over 55, say, and then you would also raise the younger limit as well. So, you know, right now it's anybody under 18 can potentially qualify. So you would maybe raise that up to like 30, right? And year after year, you would keep expanding this until you get to a point where everybody is covered. So yeah, this is where we are at right now. These are kind of the bills that are in Congress being debated right now. So again, kind of comparing our system as it currently exists to, you know, other places in the world, this graph shows you how much we spend per person on healthcare in a year. And as you can see, we spend twice as much as the next country, which would be Denmark here. And of course, significantly more than folks in, say, Japan, France, or the UK are paying. So we are paying significantly more than folks do anywhere else. This is our healthcare expenditures as a percent of GDP. So this is just how much of all the spending that happens in the country in a given year, how much of that is going towards healthcare. We are that line that is way up above everybody else. So again, we are spending way more of our money year after year on healthcare than anybody in anywhere else in the world. So one way to kind of wrap our heads around this is to look at an actual common procedure that many people have to have in their lives and sort of compare how much does that cost here versus somewhere else. So an appendectomy here in the United States can cost you up to $14,000. Again, that's twice as much as the most expensive sort of next country in line, which would be Switzerland, which is about half of that. And then you have places like Australia, Spain, where it's below $4,000. So we're talking significantly, significantly less than what we would have to pay for a procedure like that here in the States. So we heard about, you know, the issue of drug prices being so high earlier. But this is just kind of a list of prices for certain drugs compared to Canada, which has a single-payer healthcare system very similar to what's being proposed in Medicare for All. And I think a lot of us probably are aware of this, you know, problem where folks, you know, the price is so different that folks will go to Canada just to get drugs because they can't afford to get them here. And I think, you know, well, these are all awful, but I think in particular, you know, like EpiPens being nearly three times as much here than they are in the United States. And that's something that is necessary. You know, if you need an EpiPen, you need it. You can't, that's not something you can forgo. You know, Abilify, something for depression, you know, a disorder that can really destroy people's lives. $76 in Canada, $1,228 here in the US. So that is just an astronomical difference that really hits us all in the pocketbooks and just makes it difficult for us to get the care we need. So why are these costs so high? So with a for-profit system, you have a lot of money going to executives. You have shareholders, you have executives who expect significant, you know, million plus dollar salaries. You have, again, shareholders who expect to profit from this insurance system. And so that is where a lot of this extra cost goes. We also just don't have mechanisms to control costs, right? So in a single payer system, because we are all negotiating together, because we're all in the same boat, we have a lot more power to negotiate lower costs with providers, right? Because you can either go with us or nobody else, right? There's no, you don't have a bunch of different individual private companies that you can pit against each other and bargain with and try and get those prices raised up. So again, yeah, there's just little negotiating power. And there's also a lot of administrative waste and inefficiency. Let me see if it's the next slide. Yeah. So this is one that's always been interesting to me because I think the perception is that, well, government is great at a lot of things, but it's going to be wasteful. It's going to be inefficient. But if we look at Medicare, like right now as it is actually significantly cheaper as far as like overhead administrative bureaucratic costs than individual private employer-based plans are by quite a bit, right? About 1.8% of overhead costs for Medicare, whereas we're talking, you know, 12 to 20% for other private forms of insurance. And again, so yeah, this is back to the issue of prescription drugs is, you know, the reason that Canada is able to have such cheap drugs is because pharmaceutical companies have to negotiate with the government of Canada, right? They're not negotiating with 10 different individual private companies, right? They're negotiating with the government of Canada that covers all Canadian citizens. If they want to sell their drugs to Canadian citizens, they have to, you know, go through that government. And so that gives them a lot more negotiating power, a lot more leverage to say, hey, this is way too expensive. You need to lower the prices here. So this is always one of the more depressing parts about this is, you know, you would think given that we are paying more than anybody else in the world for our healthcare, that at the very least, we'd at least be getting a benefit out of that we'd at least be getting better care than most other places in the world. And that, unfortunately, is not the case. So this is from a global ranking that ranks about 36 countries in on its infant mortality. So that's, you know, how many children are dying in childbirth. We rank 32nd. So that is down towards the very bottom of that list. Same with preventable mortality. Our life expectancy in this country is down toward the bottom of that list. So on basically all of the things that we would care about most, you know, children not dying in childbirth, people not dying early of preventable diseases, people being able to live as long as possible. On all of these things, we are doing significantly worse than, again, literally every other country, just about every other country, at least every other industrialized country. Yeah, this is the one that I think really shocks me the most. Our maternal mortality rates. So we're looking at, if you look at this graph, it's how many per 100,000 live births end in a death, or the death of the child, right? And we are way above everybody else. And this is just, in general, when you start looking at marginalized women, particularly women of color, Black women, this rate gets even worse. We're one of the wealthiest, if not the wealthiest country on the face of the planet. You would think that we could at least take care of the most vulnerable among us and ensure that, you know, literal children aren't dying in childbirth. But we are not doing a very good job on that, despite spending quite a bit on our healthcare. So this kind of ties this all together. This graph is looking at how much do we spend versus how much like actual quality care are we getting for those dollars? And as you can see, the United States, if you look here, it's at the sort of bottom right there. So we are way outlier as far as the amount we're spending versus how much actual like quality care we're getting for that. So I'm just kind of returning to kind of Medicare for All and why, you know, we think it's important to support this, is the solution to basically all of these problems is some kind of single payer system, right? As we've said, that takes the profit motive out. It gives us all much stronger bargaining power with the pharmaceutical companies, the hospitals, medical device companies, things like that. And it ensures that every single person in this country is insured no matter what, because we still have I don't think we have this graph on here, unfortunately, but I want to say it's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of folks are still either uninsured or underinsured in this country. And that's even despite Obamacare. Yeah. Under like a single payer system. So it's paid for by taxpayer dollars. So there will likely be some tax increases, although that would then be offset by no longer having to pay copays, deductibles, premiums, all that kind of thing. It would also be really helpful for a lot of businesses, particularly smaller businesses that struggle to afford to buy private insurance for their employees, right? Because it takes that burden off of them. And so they then are no longer spending all that money, and they can use that to invest in more employees, better equipment, you know, whatever it might be to help grow their business. So just returning to kind of some of the things we talked about, you know, when I was asking questions earlier, you know, some of the things that came up was we want something that covers everybody. Medicare for All does that. It's universal, covers everybody in the United States. I heard folks talking about, you know, it needs to be comprehensive. So it needs to cover things like mental health, things like dental, vision that often aren't covered today, and Medicare for All does that. It's portable. So I don't know if anybody brought this up, but it's no longer tied to your job, which makes it a lot easier for folks to leave their job for something better, or maybe to try to start their own business or something like that, when they don't have to worry about, you know, well, if I leave my job, I'm no longer going to have health insurance, and what happens if I get sick, right? So it really frees people up to pursue work if they're passionate about, and again, also to pursue starting their own business if that's something they want to do. It maintains the freedom to choose your own health provider, which is something that folks are often concerned about. And it can, even under the current system, that's pretty dicey because, as folks have probably experienced, if you go from one job to the next and now you have a different insurance plan, your old doctor might not be in your new insurance plan's network, right? So with something like Medicare for All, there's no more worry about that. If you like the doctor you have, you can keep using them. If you meet another doctor that you think you'd like better, you can jump over to them. There's no worry about, you know, is this in-network, out-of-network, any of that stuff. It's all in-network. No more medical bankruptcies. This has become, I believe, the number one cause of bankruptcy in the United States is medical debt. So ending that would, and I think in and of itself, would be worthwhile. More effective negotiations. So we lower healthcare costs because, again, it is one government-run insurance system that is negotiating with pharmaceutical companies, hospitals, things like that, which gives them a lot more power to lower those prices and keep them under control. Reduces administrative cost because you're not having to pay, you know, CEOs, these really large, you know, million-dollar salary packages. And there's also just less incentive to have, you know, an overly large administrative sort of sector for this, right? It's it encourages us to keep things as affordable as possible. And I think maybe one of the most important things is just it makes it so that our health dollars, the money that we are spending when we receive healthcare, don't go to a for-profit system. They go into a system that is for everybody and helps keep that system running rather than making, again, a healthcare CEO a little richer today than they were yesterday. I'm curious what you guys think about how, you know, what we've discussed compares to some of the things that we talked about wanting earlier. Yeah, that's a real concern. The quick answer, although it's definitely something we could talk about more after this, and I'll be hanging around for coffee hour afterwards. But the quick, simple answer is we would be looking to hire those folks to run this new system. And there might also have to be some retraining. And again, you know, part of the system would be hopefully shrinking some excess bureaucratic layers here. So there might also be some issues we need to offer folks training to enter other fields if necessary. But again, this program will need plenty of folks to run it. So there will be, hopefully, there should be plenty of jobs created that these people will move into. Correct. Yes, yeah. So they would still be private, you know. I would say the system in its totality, right? So those providers plus the insurers plus, you know, manufacturers of pharmaceuticals and medical devices and things. The system as a whole would be less profit driven, right? But certainly, you know, right. Correct. Yeah. So that's part of what tamps down on that profit motive, right? Is yes, certainly some of those, you know, doctors, therapists, and things are going to be looking to make at least enough that they can survive and keep their practice going. But they will be negotiating now with an insurance sector that itself is no longer profit driven, and that is looking to keep those prices as low as possible while ensuring that the folks providing those services can still provide those services and you know, keep themselves fed and things like that. Yeah. So I don't have specific numbers off the top of my head, but I can say, again, we can look at other countries that have similar programs, and every single one of them spends less per person on healthcare than we do. So yes, they pay more in taxes, but that increase in taxes is pretty dwarfed by what they save from not paying into, again, premiums, copays, things like that. Yes.
Years of undergraduate study, and then the cost of medical school and the time that is spent in training after medical school. Think about a 12-year period. It is quite possible for students coming out right now to be $1 million a day at the time of completion of the training. And what they will choose, especially.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm not, off the top of my head, I'm not aware of anything in these current bills that are aimed at that problem, but I would absolutely agree. And, you know, we've been doing listening sessions like this throughout Illinois, and this is something that comes up regularly. Is we have to tackle the cost of educating healthcare providers, because right now you're leaving folks with all this debt that, as you said, then drives them into the specialties that are going to pay them more, not necessarily the specialties that they want to do or that we need more doctors in, for sure. One second, I think there was in the back.
So you said that the tax would be higher, but they will save more on the money spent on medical services. Who's that?
Us, yeah, yeah, us everyday citizens. So, you know, again, this would be paid through taxes. Yeah, yeah. And I should also say part of this has to be, we're also going to have to tax wealthier people more to do this, because we don't want this burden to fall on middle class and working class folks. But yeah, yep.
So it might be.
Exactly. Yeah.
Less taxes than we are
now. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So when we look at these other countries, we see that yes, they often pay more in taxes for this, but then they're not paying, yeah, these premiums, copays, things like that. And so the way it shakes out, they are actually paying a lot less for their healthcare than we are. They're just doing it through taxes instead of by paying a private company. Once again, I think there was.
Universal education. So they have no cost education for college, university, medical school. So that's a problem that I also see with our current setup of the for-profit schools.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and I definitely think, you know, as with so many of these important issues, this is one of those things that Medicare for All will help, but it does need to be paired with other reforms, like making university more affordable.
We have one more question.
I'll let you choose.
Dave Wyman. David Wessner.
All residents are included. Is that to be contrasted with citizens?
So my understanding is that as these bills are currently written, they would cover undocumented folks. Which is something that we would certainly support and want to protect from being removed from these bills. Because I would say, certainly at IPA, we believe that everybody deserves healthcare, regardless of whether you're a citizen or not. All right. So our question is, you know, are you in? Are you ready to fight for this? So sounds like that's a yes. One thing we do have coming up on the 20th of this month, it's going to be online from 6 to 8 p.m. We are having a candidate forum with Paul Nolley, who's running in the 16th against Darren LaHood, where we're going to be asking him questions about his healthcare policy. Part of how we're going to be doing that is we're going to be sharing our own lived experiences with this system and sort of how it has failed us and asking him, you know, what would you do to help fix these issues? I'm going to be hanging out for coffee afterwards. If anybody has a healthcare story that they would be interested in sharing with a candidate like Paul Nolley, please do let me know. We're still looking for folks who are kind of willing to share those stories. And that's really important because politicians at their best are moved by these, you know, real lived experiences of this harm, right? More often than they are necessarily wonky, you know, statistics and data and things like that. So yeah, like I said, I will be hanging out for a little bit afterwards. So please do feel free to come ask me any questions.